Are we staring down a Fed pivot? Here's what matters. Live from New York City, I'm Lauren Goodwin, and this is Market Matters from New York Life Investments. In this podcast, we bring you the best insights from across the New York Life Investments platform because we believe that by sharing perspectives and engaging with you, our listeners, we can all become better investors. Welcome, everyone. It's the week of January 29th, 2024, and today we want to get right to the heart of the key market debate, the Fed's next move. The Fed meets this Wednesday, and the market has agreed that interest rates will remain on hold this time. But for their March meeting the next time, debate is raging over whether the Fed will hold rates or if it will deliver the first interest rate cut since 2020. The debate is this. With core inflation at 3.9%, double its 2% target, why are we talking about Fed cuts? And with an unemployment at 3.7%, why are we talking about Fed cuts? Put in other words, inflation is still running hot and the labor market is still running hot, presumably telling investors that the economy is strong enough to keep pushing price growth up and to keep jobs and wages supported. And yet many investors are convinced that the economy needs interest rate cuts or policy support. You're not picking up what Julia's putting down. The very economic data that the Fed's been pointing to for the last couple of years, the plain and simple math of its goals related to inflation and employment, that data suggests that it's not time to cut rates yet. At a minimum, the Fed would want to see a little more sustained momentum towards its goals after data firmed a bit in the last couple of months. So then what's changed? For the rest of today, we'll share why this debate is so prominent among investors right now and a few of the risks or swing vote factors that could cause our own view to shift over the next months. So first off, Julia, I want to ask you this. Even though the fundamental data is pointing in the direction of our view for rates to stay on hold, are you surprised that this talk of a Fed cut has popped up?
I am not at all surprised for so many reasons. I'm going to start with the most topical and work my way up into the real reason.
Sending order. Okay.
Looking back over history, the Fed simply does not keep rates on hold for very long after a hiking cycle. In the 70s and 80s, which was the most inflationary post-war period, the Fed never held rates after a hiking cycle for longer than 3 months. It immediately transitioned into policy support, interest rate cuts. From the 90s onward, though, I will say the reversals have been less immediate, with holding periods of 5, 8, 15, and 7 months following the four hiking cycles we've seen since 1995. In this case, the Fed's been on hold since late July, marking about 6 months on hold.
I know that you said this might be the most topical reason to call for rate cuts, but let's actually double click here. What does the brevity of these holding periods tell us about Fed policy itself?
Yeah, it tells us a combination of things. It tells us that oftentimes the Fed is hiking interest rates straight into a recession, which requires immediate easing, immediate policy reversal. It can also then tell us that the Fed historically over-tightens policy right into that recession, which then contributes to the need to reverse immediately. And since the time spent at the top, on hold after a hiking cycle, since that time has gotten longer in the past 30 years, we might also say that policy has become a little bit more fine-tuned, a little more patient. And then the final thing I want to draw from this is the market's constant thirst for policy support, which has a great historical track record as well.
I'll add another just because we're sitting in the middle of it right now. The long and variable lags of Fed policy, it can take 2 years. In fact, it typically does take 2 years or even more for the impact of Fed interest rate hikes to work its way through to the economy. And so that reversal that the Fed has to do can happen kind of quickly. But now we've talked about how this market has been overeager for policy support in this cycle, that last point you made. Would you say that that's in play right now?
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons why these calls for rate cuts are unsurprising. Investors hear a lot about greed and fear in the market, but I think that the calls for policy support we're seeing go a little bit deeper than just investors wanting markets to perform better. The past 15 years really have conditioned investors and the markets to expect and rely on easy financial conditions.
Yeah, it's a major pushback that a lot of economists and strategists pointed to when the Fed started using its balance sheet and low interest rates as policy tools, that this might be one of the consequences. And so here we are, at least for today. You mentioned, though, Julia, at the top of the episode that you wanted to end with the most fundamental reason we're seeing calls for policy support. What is that?
Well, because the Fed said so. We discussed this prior on the podcast, but in its December meeting, the Fed came quite close to calling victory on inflation too soon, in our team's view. What it actually said, though, is that it considers the risk to growth to now be more balanced with inflation risks, which implies a major shift in focus from being solely on price control and now to maintaining economic growth as well. Lauren, I know you've done a fair bit of thinking on how that shift came about, this pretty notable dovish shift from the Fed. Can you tell us more about your take on it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something we've been talking a lot about at the Global Market Strategy team because it's frustrating for investors, right? For better or worse, over the last 2 years, the Fed was highly focused on inflation. It was difficult for investors who saw no light at the end of the rates tunnel. There were a lot of misses in expectations of just how high the Fed would be raising interest rates. But at the very least, the Fed's underlying concern during that interest rate hiking cycle was clear. An economy with runaway inflation doesn't work for anyone, Chair Powell said it multiple times. And so as long as inflation was stubbornly high, the Fed wasn't going to be anywhere near cutting rates. They didn't need to focus on other elements of the economy or markets because that was the one that was the most painful at the time. And so what's changed now is that the Fed seems to have signaled that it's made enough progress on that inflation front to bring more of a balance and therefore be able to focus on those other factors, including their full employment mandate.
Right. This really is progress and not perfection in terms of a view. And we can measure that progress, by the way. It's called the Taylor Rule, which is essentially an equation, not a hard and fast rule, that estimates where the policy rate should be based on where economic growth is relative to trend and where inflation is relative to target. So even though what I said at the top is true, growth is above trend right now and inflation is above target, they are less so than, say, last year. So that's the progress. It implies that policy rates can potentially start to come down.
What that means, what this shift in the Fed's focus means, is that investors are going to be sitting, as they are right now, in what I'm calling said pivot purgatory.
Got to copyright that, LG.
Well, part of the reason I say purgatory is because, look, the market's looking for a pivot. But a 25 basis point cut, or even 8 of them, would still leave us with restrictive policy. It's enough to help sentiment and flows in the short term, which is really important for investors. But we would expect that to be temporary before slowing growth becomes the more dominant narrative. And that's when a different set of asset classes would outperform and underperform. That brings us to our portfolio pause, a segment of the program where we share an investment idea.
I'm having this very strong vision in my head of a certain beloved 90s sitcom character with a couch stuck in a stairwell screaming, pivot!
Well, as the market screams pivot, just like that person, let's make sure we touch on risks to our view that a credible Fed easing cycle should be based on just the data several months away. And then we'll tie them to allocation choices. The first one has got to be the health of the economy.
Right. The U.S. economy is holding up well now. But if growth slows quickly, the Fed will likely have to cut sooner and more substantially than anyone currently expects. A circumstance like this would actually probably be the least risk-on market interpretation of interest rate cuts, because that purgatory period between the start of policy support and the onset of recession would be very brief if the economy is slowing rapidly. This is a good news is bad news scenario where you have the interest rate cuts, but you also have the economic growth slowdown. And in that case, we'd be focused on credit quality in both bonds and equities.
I'm going to take your same reason, but give the opposite example. What if economic growth reaccelerates? There's, for example, a tax bill sitting in Congress, may or may not get passed. That's not for us to decide. But if it did, it might support corporate profits and make a reacceleration of inflation more likely. And so that's another way that good news in the economy might be bad news for the markets, because then inflation would be more likely to reaccelerate and keep the Fed at higher rates for longer. Okay, the second risk that we were going to talk about today with respect to the Fed is financial stability.
Ooh, say more on that, because it's been a pretty long time, actually, since we had financial stability and banking health keeping us up at night.
Yeah, so I'll just say that we don't see a specific risk to financial stability right now, but because the economy is likely to slow at least a little bit ahead, financial stability may now become more of a vocal swing vote in the timing of Fed cuts. Why? Well, the Fed has been reducing the size of its balance sheet at the same time that it's been hiking and then holding rates. And as a result, just really recently, volatility in overnight interest rate markets has picked up occasionally. Again, that's far from problematic today. I don't want to cry wolf, but if we did see a financial stability risk, it would likely be met with easing in this area, as was the case last year. In fact, since last year's economic upside was driven by unexpected liquidity gains, in part because of the response to the regional banking crisis, such an event, if it happened again today, would be important for risk assets and likely contribute to another round of pro-cyclical rally again, like we saw last year.
Fantastic point. So when we're talking about the risk that could cause the Fed to cut sooner, we're talking about risk to economic growth and risk to financial stability. And finally, I want to bring up politics. Our most careful listeners may remember my diatribe a few weeks ago about how every Fed chair since Volcker has served under presidents of both parties. And politics really should not play a role in the independence of the Fed's policy this year, but it may. A hotly contested U.S. election means that both sides of the aisle will likely be pointing fingers at the Fed. And a rise in uncertainty in an event like this may contribute to a flight to quality.
Coming up next, we talked a bit today about Fed pivot purgatory. And so we're going to bring some specific investment ideas about how investors can consider and stay invested in this environment. First up is going to be a story about the bond market. But that's it for today. We'll be back next week for more Market Matters. In the meantime, please remember to give us a like, follow, or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have a question or topic of interest, reach out to us on LinkedIn. You can also follow our views at newyorklifeinvestments.com/global-markets. Until then, I'm Lauren Goodwin here with Julia Herman, and we will see you next time.
Our podcast is produced by Will Tyus, and our music was composed by the fabulous Zach Young. I will now read our disclosures from compliance. Past performance is no guarantee of future results, which will vary. All investments are subject to market risk and will fluctuate in value. This material represents an assessment of the market environment as at a specific date, is subject to change, and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or a guarantee of future results. This information should not be relied upon by the reader as research or investment advice regarding the funds or any issuer or security in particular. The strategies discussed are strictly for illustrative and educational purposes and are not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. There is no guarantee that any strategies discussed will be effective. This material contains general information only and does not take into account an individual's financial circumstances. This information should not be relied upon as a primary basis for an investment decision. Rather, an assessment should be made as to whether the information is appropriate in individual circumstances, and consideration should be given to talking to a financial advisor before making an investment decision. New York Life Investments is both the service mark and the common trade name of certain investment advisors affiliated with the New York Life Insurance Company. Securities are distributed by NyLife Distributors, LLC, 30 Hudson Street, Jersey City, New Jersey, 07302, a wholly owned subsidiary of New York Life Insurance Company. NyLife Distributors, LLC is a member of FINRA SIPC.